is a very, very busy week for football fans, from the Premier League to the Champions League to the money games in Major League Soccer and baseball.
Sorry. Why do you do this
to me? Had to do it just for our co-host here, John Molinaro's benefit. I'm James Sharman. I'm actually doing a feature today, JMO, which incorporates both soccer and baseball, just for your benefit.
Then we're not going to run it on the website.
I know. The minute I started running, I thought, there's no way JMO will allow this to make the any kind of presence felt on sportsnet.ca. Oh, well. It's pretty good. It's interesting.
Okay. I'll take a look at it.
All right. All right. Well, as mentioned, we've got a lot to get to today. It's a big weekend coming up, as always, and some really interesting results from the Champions League. But as I mentioned beforehand there, big weekend, huge weekend in Major League Soccer. We're joined now by MLSsoccer.com's Olivier Tremblay. Olivier, welcome to the show. It's a pretty big weekend for Montreal, the city that you reside in. Montreal TFC at stake is potentially home field advantage and maybe a bye as well. Is there a buzz around Montreal, or are they still right now just in disbelief about the Canadiens' start to the season?
Well, that is a fair assessment. People are very much in awe of the Habs way of playing right now, and with the way that Buffalo and Toronto played last night, I think people are even more optimistic for prospects of maybe two wins over the weekend. But yeah, I mean, the Impact are drawing big attention right now, and with this, I think most people, to be honest, expected maybe this to go down to the wire, and that Toronto game being the one that would maybe decide whether they would make the playoffs or not. But clinching away from home with a fine goal by Piatti against New England was a dream come true for Montreal fans. And right now, people are very optimistic. The game against Toronto has been sold out for many days now. So it's going to be a really, really interesting decision day for Montreal, for sure.
And if you look at this run-in that they've had, it's been just outstanding. And obviously, the common denominator is Didier Drogba and all those goals. But quietly, and people aren't talking about this as much, I don't think, but Mauro Biello has done such a great job since Frank Kloppas was let go. What's been the main reason for this rediscovery of form? Is it Drogba, the sexy choice, or is it the man on the sidelines?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both, to be honest. Mauro Biello has done a fantastic job to really... Obviously, you can't minimize Didier Drogba's effect, but you have to use him in the right manner and put him in the best conditions to be successful. And the way that Montreal have set up, the way that they've managed the squad and rotated the squad and sending some guys home ahead of the San Jose game and actually getting a very good result, it's been a little bit of both. But yeah, you look at Drogba, the way that he won't. He's not a guy that accepts complacency from anyone around him, and I think it's something that we've seen from his time in Europe, especially at Chelsea, where with a coach like Jose Mourinho around you, you're not going to grow up to be any other kind of player. Drogba drives people to be better. He's the one that makes the. He's the one that makes the sum of every part actually greater than sum of every part. He drives people to be better, and Biello has used that to maximum effect. And you look at, and it's not just on the field either. You look at that viral video that's popped up on the internet of Drogba inviting academy kids to the locker room and having a dance off. It's on club level. It's not just the first team. He brings something, a sense of belonging to the club. He's taken to Montreal like a fish to water. And the way that Biello and Drogba have paired up to bring Montreal, look a team transformed. So I think you can't talk of one without mentioning the other, because they go hand in hand, really.
I don't think it's an exaggeration to say Montreal is one of, if not the hottest team in MLS since the coaching change, since Biello's taken over. It's 6 wins out of 10 games with only two losses, so it's 20 points out of 30. You know, they're coming off back-to-back home wins, or road wins, and Drogba is obviously in fine form. And I talked to Patrice Bernier earlier today for a story that I wrote and asked him whether he thought the Impact are getting the respect that they deserve. Interested to hear your take on it. I mean, not too many people talking about Montreal. Should they be?
I think it's a fair assessment by Bernier. I actually read your story, and it was a very good story. And Bernier actually spoke of something similar earlier this week, but talking specifically about the rivalry between Montreal and Toronto, because you look at when other outlets south of the border try and make, I don't know, power rankings of rivalries in MLS, it's always about, you know, Cascadia and New York and Chicago and those kinds of rivalries. And I remember seeing something like even Dallas and Houston being ahead of Montreal and Toronto. And it's like, what the hell are you talking about? It makes no sense whatsoever. You see the history between the two cities, and it seems like every, and I think Bernier actually mentioned that in your story, it's not just Montreal, it's not just Toronto, it's Vancouver as well. Right. It's very much a U.S.-based league. And I think those three teams get overlooked, and it's a fantastic opportunity with all three teams making the playoffs, although there are very strong possibilities that Montreal and Toronto face each other in the playoffs, so we're going to have only two, maybe one Canadian team very early on in the process. But it's a very good opportunity to actually show Americans maybe a little taste of Canadian soccer that they haven't had before. And with potentially two Montreal-Toronto games in 4 or 5 days, and decision day being that big a deal in the U.S., I think you could see maybe some people down the border, south of the border, turning up and go, oh, what's going on over there? That's interesting. I want more of that.
You know, MLS are terrified though, right? That there'll be two Canuck teams going
in the
deep
final?
In the playoffs.
Yeah.
Oh my, MLS would hate it. So we can begin the conspiracy theories now about refereeing and anything controversial. I wonder. We love doing that up here, don't we? About, yes, you know, blaming the networks south of the border for being up to no good. Forgive me here, Olivier. Biello is still interim officially, correct?
Yes, he is still officially an interim head coach.
Okay,
but
now
I mean, it's looking very good for his employment prospects, shall we say.
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, it's been a great story, and he deserves all the credit, you know, quite frankly, and hopefully he'll get rewarded with that. Back to Drogba here. I know he signed an 18-month contract. I was speaking to Lloyd Barker about this on Monday's podcast, and he says that Drogba is tired. He's a tired footballer. Is there any concern that he might just call it quits this summer after, you know, a great finale? And beyond that, say he comes back, is there talk of an extension on the opposite?
There hasn't been talk of an extension so far. I think it's very early in the process anyway. But you look at the way that, as I said, you know, Drogba has adapted really quickly to the city and this club. I can't see him just calling it quits before the end of his 18-month contract. I think he said all the right things during his introductory press conference, saying that, you know, he didn't come here for a quick payday at the dawn of his career or anything like that. He came here to win trophies. And so far, you know, I was a little bit of a doubter, maybe, because I didn't think he would adapt so quickly to MLS. But you look at his numbers. I mean, if I'm Didi Drogba and I'm his age, and I look at what I'm doing right now, and the and potentially having another full season of that with, hopefully, because this is Montreal and you can't rule that out, but hopefully a lot of the same guys already around me being back for another year. I mean, I don't know that I can spit on that and just take my ball and go home. I think he's going to be here for 2016, and I think that he's going to be a really good fit for MLS again for a full season. And if I'm Don Garber and I hear that maybe Drogba doesn't want to go the full length of his contract, I pick up the phone and I call Joey Saputo right away.
How much has he moved the dial in Montreal, Olivier, in terms of, you know, the coverage or the buzz that the Impact got? Because let's face it, it's, you know, the Montreal Canadiens are, you know, the kings of the city in terms of the sporting landscape, and everyone else is fighting for table scraps. My impression, and maybe that's the false impression, is that they've always had to struggle to get coverage in the English press as opposed to the French language press. I'm wondering if Drogba has any sort of had any influence in that regard.
It's interesting that you would ask this question, because I am writing a story right now, and I actually filed it some hours ago.
There you go.
About numbers and the Drogba effect. And to be honest, in terms of English language coverage, and you mentioned it on Twitter for a long time, right, John, I think, it is true that Montreal don't get quite the coverage that they probably should get. You look at the Montreal Gazette that still have one, two guys covering a single Alouettes game, and the Alouettes haven't been just underachieving. They've been absolutely dreadful to watch. It's just boring Canadian football right now at Percival Molson Stadium, and yet they still get a lot of coverage. TSN Radio do a good job of covering the team. They have a contract, they are partners, and they broadcast the games, and Rick Moffat and Grant Needham do a very good job. But on the TV side of things, we've hardly ever seen a reporter from TSN coming to cover the team, and it's been very difficult to get English language coverage in the city. On the other hand, French language media, they've always been there, and they but to be honest, they get a lot of stick from fans because sometimes they don't feel like there's an understanding of what soccer actually is about.
Oh,
but
interesting.
For example, you know, you know how it is, you know, at the desk, sometimes you're working and you may get tired and a mishap is going to happen. And for example, today one website was reporting that the Rapids with a win against Kansas City had qualified for the playoffs for the first time since 2002, which I can't actually wrap my head around to how you would make that kind of mistake. But, you know, soccer fans in Montreal mostly, I think, and that's just my personal assessment, want not to be validated, but maybe respected a little bit more. And, you know, to their credit, they have been tuning in. I mean, you look at numbers that Montreal have had since Drogba came in, you know, they've sold out 5 of 6 home games that they've had since Drogba debuted on August 22. Their last 8 home games have drawn crowds averaging more than 20,000, and the capacity of Stade Saputo is 20,801. And it's already been their best attended season in all competitions. 460,000 fans have showed up so far, compared to their previous best of 420,000. And you look at the TV numbers on French television, both stations, RDS and TVS Sports, have told me that their numbers have more or less doubled since Drogba came in, and it started a little bit during CCL because, for instance, TVS Sports were broadcasting that game, and they had a peak hour audience of 722,000 viewers, and when you look at what MLS Cup draws sometimes in the U.S., that's a pretty damn good number considering the population of Quebec. So the media coverage is there. Montreal have quadrupled their media prominence in Quebec, according to data by Influence Communications, which is a media information broker. So things are really good, and there's a good window of opportunity open for Montreal, who now have to capitalize on that, the Montreal Impact.
Sure. No, that's a valid point. I'm interested to hear, I mean, and I don't know if this was on the radar in Montreal at all this week, but after TFC's last game on the weekend, Coach Greg Vanney was asked about Didier Drogba in the post-match press conference, and he said, well, you know, I played against Drogba, and he's a great player, and he's very physical, but, you know, it's either one or two Drogbas that you're going to face, the one who really is physical and will have a go at you, or the Drogba that will go down early and easily and try to draw penalties. I wonder how well that went over in Montreal. Did that sort of catch on the radar over there? Are they talking about it at all?
That went over very, very, very well, John.
Oh, okay.
Really, really well. Actually, Drogba was asked about it after the New England game, and the only answer that he had, he went, it's okay. You know, I don't hold it against him or anything. And then he kind of smiled the Drogba troll face smile that maybe we've seen sometimes from him, you know, meaning, okay, well, maybe I'm just not going to reply to that, and I'm just going to bank 4 goals against CFC, something like that. You know, some players have also taken to Twitter and said things to the effect of, well, you know, he's heard about it, and that's probably not the kind of thing that you want him to hear about. And but you know, to their credit, Montreal, they haven't tried to stir the pot that much. They've let that quote kind of just, they've tried to let it just go over and see what happens. But yes, Drogba has heard about it. He knows that Greg Bennett has said this. And you know, to be honest, you listen to the entire quote, and it's not really that bad. I think
I agree.
To a certain extent, Vanny is trying to praise him a little bit, while maybe trying to just rub him just a little bit the wrong way. But I don't think you'll ask any Montreal fan about this quote of Vanny's, and they don't like it, but they kind of enjoy the prospect of Drogba maybe trying to one-up him with some on-the-field talk, shall we say.
And I wonder if Vanny's maybe trying to subtly remind the referees that, hey,
yes,
keep an eye on Didier this weekend. I wonder if Didier remembers playing against Greg.
That's a good question.
And nothing against Greg.
No.
Vanny is a player, a very good player. Just you remember playing against Didier Drogba.
Right?
Most players remember playing against Didier Drogba, but I'm not quite sure it's the same for, you know,
well, I'm drawing
other players.
That's a question to be asked. That maybe we need to ask Drogba, because the thing is, Drogba never speaks before the games. He only speaks after games in the locker room, and that's when he actually wants to do so. To be honest, he's been very good with the media since his early mishaps of him going to the other side of the room to kind of sulk and try to wait for the media people to leave, but he's been very good, and if he's asked the question about remembering playing against Vanny this weekend, he'll probably answer it.
I'm sure he will. Olivier, thanks so much for this. Enjoy Sunday. It's a 5 p.m. kickoff, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And it's arguably the biggest game we've seen between these two teams, including
absolutely,
you know, Canadian championships. It means a lot. This really does. Thanks, mate. Appreciate it, and we'll speak to you real soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.
That's Olivier Tremblay of MLSsoccer.com. You can follow Olivier on Twitter at Oli Tremblay. Always a good follow and a great read on all things Montreal.
In French and English.
In French and English.
Yeah.
Yep. I can barely master English. He's writing in both. Now, I've got to ask you quickly. Obviously, it's the first time we see Drogba against Sebastian Giovinco.
Yeah.
Which is exciting. Really exciting. A lot of talk about the MVP race. Kai Kamara isn't playing this weekend. He's suspended.
That's true. Yeah, he's suspended.
Right? He's suspended. So it looks good for Seba. 22 goals, 15 assists. That's obviously a combination. 37 goals. He's been involved in number one ever record for the MLS. Is there any dispute who's going to win this award?
No, not as far as I'm concerned.
No?
I mean, no, none whatsoever. I think Sebastian Giovinco has, not just in terms of this season, I think he's had historically one of the best seasons in MLS history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I shudder to think what TFC would be without him. Like, they wouldn't be in this position. And that's not a criticism of TFC. I mean, that's why they signed him, right? To make an influence and to make an impact. And he's done that. I think Drogba, I would have been really interested to see what kind of impact, you'll pardon the pun, he would have had he come in at the start of the season. Would he have been as good as Seba? That would have been a really interesting
race. He wouldn't have played every minute.
That's true, too. They definitely would have managed his time, like, a lot sort of more judiciously as opposed to what Vandy's done with Giovinco. And there is the age difference as well. But you have to wonder if he would have been, like, right up there. Like, over the course of the last, whatever it is, 10 games, I think he's been right up there with Giovinco.
Sure.
He's been just as good. So,
well, and I know when he signed, I said in this podcast, I think I wrote about it as well, I was cautiously optimistic about Giovinco.
I was too,
It was, okay, if he stays healthy, he'll score a lot of goals in this league. My concern was he's going to get hurt at some point.
Right.
Look at his recent, you know, history. But he's managed to stay healthy, and hopefully mm-hmm. stays healthy for the playoffs too, because you want to see this guy, and because I think he can put that team on his shoulders.
Absolutely.
Getting deep into the playoffs. He got them into the playoffs.
Absolutely. I think he, and again, this isn't to undermine anything he's done. He's been brilliant. But I do think you got to give credit to Biello too, because it's been night and day since he took over, and he's really sort of reinvigorated that team. So
yeah, absolutely.
Good on him.
Absolutely. So that's this weekend, 5 p.m. Sunday, Montreal, Toronto. And then we'll start talking about playoff matchups.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It would be something if Montreal and Toronto somehow were to meet in there.
Oh, it'd be brilliant.
Oh, my God.
Tickets on sale as of today well for TFC playoff games. That's something, eh?
I can't believe you're saying that, a playoff game.
I know. It's still very odd, isn't it? It really is.
It's very hard to wrap my brain around it.
Well, that's the MLS story taken care of. Before we get to the Premier League, it was an exciting week in the Champions League. Some really strange results. Arsenal, for example, your Arsenal beat Bayern Munich.
Didn't see that coming.
No, not at all. Not only did they beat them, but they beat them playing counter-attacking football, giving Bayern Munich the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 73% possession for Bayern Munich. Now, if you watch Arsenal for the last, since 1996, that's a staggering stat. And for a long time, people have challenged Wenger, try something different against the super big clubs.
Right.
Don't try and out-football them. It doesn't work. And finally, he listened clearly to us. And it worked. They got the job done against, admittedly, the injury-depleted Bayern Munich, but it's still Bayern Munich.
It's still Bayern Munich.
Very impressive performance.
It was.
I wrote about it today in the blog, but what are your thoughts going forward? Do you think Wenger's learned from this performance and this tactic, or is it going to be, you know, back to normal this weekend against Everton?
Well, I mean, there's two answers to that. Yes, I think he'll go back to, you know, playing the champagne football of trying to walk the ball into the net against Everton this weekend. That's just the Arsenal and Arsene Wenger way. But you do hope that he's learned a lesson here and that he's not necessarily tied to that, and that when he has to, he can sort of play this, for lack of a better word, pragmatic approach and really go about it in a different way. And, you know, he recognized the situation against Bayern. I think it was a very mature performance by them and very brave in a sense, because to play that way against, for my money, the best club team in the world right now, and to shut them out and to manage the game like they did, you know, concede possession, to say, okay, you can have the ball, but we're going to manage this and we're going to thwart you and we're going to hit you out on the counter. To do that and to pull it off, I know it was at home, but to do that against a team the caliber of Bayern Munich, I think that's very impressive. And I think it was, hopefully it's a reference point for them going forward.
Well, we'll see. I mean, they've got some big results in the last two or three weeks, right?
Yeah.
United result, of course, won last weekend.
Yeah.
They really are, you know, finding their form and showing a spine perhaps that we doubt that they may have had last year.
Absolutely.
Up against Everton this weekend, Everton's up and down. You know, they should beat Everton, you think?
I would think so. Yeah.
But hey, it's Everton. They can look like world beaters 1 week.
And
then they're like, you know, relegation strugglers next week. So,
and you never know. Some teams tend to have that sort of Champions League
hangover.
Thank you.
They do. Absolutely. Chelsea tied Dinamo Kiev 0-0. Played pretty well, actually, in that game.
Should have had a penalty.
Yeah, absolutely. I know Jose's come out once
again. Yeah, did he say something about that? I missed that.
Playing against the officials again. My God. Like, he just picks fights. Even when he's right, you want him to be wrong because you're just sick of it.
Yeah.
You know? He's got to be careful. He really has to be careful.
I don't think he cares. I mean, he's, you know, he's in his own Jose world. So
he had Zuma right back in that match.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Vanovic not even in the matchday squad.
And Hazard didn't start, I don't think.
He did that game. He didn't start on the weekend.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Right?
The weekend, he was benched.
Right.
Maybe a message being sent there.
Oh, I don't think so. Yeah, I think so.
And, no doubt. Hazard's shown in the past that he does respond to messages.
Yeah.
Right. Last year, he was called out before the season by Mourinho.
Right.
And he had one of the most dominating performances all year long that we've seen for a long time.
So let me ask you about that real quick. What do you think the story is with him this year?
With Hazard?
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you. Don't know.
Can't be a confidence thing.
No, I mean,
think.
Maybe it's the players around him. They're not playing well. I mean,
maybe.
Last year, he was doing so well when he had Fabregas and Matic as almost like a shield almost to allow him the space to do what he wants. And this year, they haven't got the job done, clearly.
Right.
Maybe that's partly what it is. Maybe the manager's losing his voice. Who knows? You know, I mean, it's the third year for Jose. We've seen it at numerous clubs.
Right.
I think that's a bit of a con. I think he'll be fine. Jose will adapt, and this team will find their footing, and they'll finish top four in the end. But yeah, I mean, he was just so good last year. But he seems a bit of a flighty individual, doesn't he? You know, we've seen him.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah, you know, being that kind of personality you don't want to count on in the trenches, so to speak. So when your team starts off badly in a year, are you going to rely on Eden Hazard to get you out of it? He's kind of guy that I think when things are going well, he's absolutely brilliant.
Right.
But he's not that kind of, you know, that ruthless personality, perhaps.
Interesting.
Prove me wrong, please, because I love watching Hazard play. Zenit beat Lyon 3-1. Just mentioned that. The Hulk goal. Did you see this one?
No.
Oh, it was outstanding.
Was it?
Dispossessed the midfielder and center field. Walked through about three guys, then blasted it from a long way out. It was a typical Hulk goal. He just out-muscled the midfielder to get the ball originally. Could have been a free kick, actually. Just, I really enjoyed that goal. United tied CSKA Moscow 1-1.
Had to come back.
Martial with a handball to give up the goal.
Yes.
And then he scored the equalizer. You like this guy, Martial? Are you a believer yet?
I like what I've seen so far. I'm not going gaga over him like everyone else seems to. But I think the early signs are encouraging.
Now, their rivals, Man City, they took care of Sevilla, right? 2-1. De Bruyne scores again. 4 goals,
that
5
was a
assists
nice goal.
Now in 9 games.
That was a nice goal. Another late one for Man City, too.
Why is no one really talking about Kevin De Bruyne right now?
I don't know.
I mean, if he was anyone else, right, it'd be, you know, if this was Martial doing what he's doing,
yeah,
or if this was any other newcomer, a new newcomer to the league, he's absolutely brilliant.
I wonder if it has something to do with the fact that it's his second time around in the EPL and that they don't, I mean, people may be a little hesitant to sort of, you know, throw praise at him because the first time around didn't go so well. Through no fault of his own. I don't think he was really given much of a chance at Chelsea under Jose Mourinho, but I wonder if everyone's just sort of waiting to see, you know, if this pans out for a little bit longer.
Just for the last 8 games, he's been arguably the best player in the
Premier League. He's been exceptional.
And
he's
no
been
one's
really good.
Not many people are talking about him apart from Man City fans and observers, right?
He's been great.
He's been really good. We make it this whole UEFA investigating the City fans booing the Champions League anthem. I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
Like, what? On what grounds exactly? It wasn't, you know, racially infused. It wasn't, you know, xenophobic.
Right.
They just booed.
And
the
UEFA Champions League,
which is ridiculous anyway.
I don't get it. I really, James, when I saw the story move across the newswire today, I was like, am I missing something here? Like, there's got to be like, what? I don't get this. Like, what's the real story here? I thought I was just misreading it. And I'm like, no, they're actually investigating this.
You think UEFA too, who are in a bit of a PR crisis right now.
They might not want to draw attention to themselves.
You think so? I mean, the levels of arrogance, you think they may have reached the peak with Michel Platini.
But it's absurd.
It continues.
Makes no sense.
I guess maybe it's because Platini's not there to keep a calm hand
maybe on
the shoulder, so to speak. And I don't know. I can't imagine this going anywhere.
I wouldn't think so. I mean, if they actually get fined or, I mean, God forbid, could you imagine if they're forced to like play a game behind closed doors behind this?
Oh, my word, yeah.
Like, wouldn't that be something?
Or there could be a fine, you know, equal to that of some horrible racist abuse we've heard, you know?
Yeah. Like, come on. Exercise some common sense.
My God, the state of the game, the governing bodies around the world.
It's absurd.
It is absolutely absurd. Juve tied Mönchengladbach 0-0.
Yeah.
Juve, they tied Inter on the weekend 0-0 as
they
well,
did.
Right?
Yeah, on the road.
14th now in the table, though.
Yes.
Mauricio Zamperini, the Palermo president's all over them, saying that the way they're treating Dybala is atrocious and Allegri's ruining him as a footballer.
Well, first of all, I think you have to say, take anything that Zamperini says with a huge grain of salt.
You know, it's funny because I was just thinking this past week about crazy owners and chairman, and I was thinking, who the hell is the Palermo guy again?
He tops the list. He's up there.
Without doubt, he is the craziest. Yeah. Think about the Cellinis and these nutcases around the world right now. Zamperini at Palermo. He's fired like 50 managers.
Something like
over
that.
Over his like 15 years in charge.
It's crazy. Yeah. So, anything he says, you have to take with a massive grain of salt. And I think it's far too early in terms of, you know, statements in terms of, Allegri has ruined Dybala. I think that's way too premature.
I think so. I didn't mention it during the United match. Do you see this Bastian Schweinsteiger Nazi doll?
No.
Some toy company in Germany, I guess they, for whatever reason, have a line of Nazi dolls. And this one soldier, Nazi soldier, looks identical to Bastian Schweinsteiger to the point that he's actually suing the company.
Really?
Yeah.
Have they called it Bastian or something like that?
No,
or it just looks like it.
Just looks like it. And it's all over Twitter. Just have a look on Twitter or Google it. The comparisons are, it's blatant. Blatant
really?
Schweiny ripoff here. And I can't blame him for wanting to.
Yeah, I can't imagine why he's upset about that.
That ain't good PR.
No.
Not good at all. You saw the Real Madrid game, right? PSG 0-0?
I did, unfortunately.
Yeah. Disappointing, right?
It was dull. It was, I'm not sure if it was the conditions that sort of led to it because it was rainy. There was a lot of guys missing through injury. Like Real Madrid was missing like countless starters. And PSG was missing a few guys as well. So the only guy who really stood out for me was Marco Verratti, which is good news for the Italian national team. I thought he was really put in a strong performance and tried to influence the game in a positive and dynamic way. Other than that, Zlatan was dropping very deep and didn't have much of an influence. Ronaldo was pretty quiet. Wasn't much of a game from a spectacle that was billed, you know, as a contest between the two most expensive sides ever put together. So it was disappointing from an entertainment perspective.
I think Zlatan, we might be seeing the beginning of the end of Zlatan.
Maybe. Could be, yeah.
I mean, he's 34 now.
Yeah.
Or thereabouts, right?
Yeah.
It had to happen at some point.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
We're probably seeing it.
Absolutely.
I might get a big contract for a year somewhere next year.
Maybe in MLS.
PSG, maybe MLS, yeah. Oh,
wouldn't that be great?
Amazing seeing Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
I think that'd be fantastic.
He's the one player in world football right now I want to see in MLS. Like, yeah. It's realistic.
Yes.
Because Ronaldo's not going yet. Rooney's not going yet.
Sure.
I want to see Ibra in MLS.
Wouldn't that be something?
Whereabouts? He's a big city guy, isn't he? He's got to be New York or LA.
Yeah, I would think he would. Like, he's not going to Columbus or San Jose.
Well, you never know.
Yeah.
It's Ibra, right? He does maybe, weird things sometimes.
Maybe it's the new LA team that's coming into the league.
Sure.
Maybe it's
Beckham's Miami team. Whenever
yeah, maybe it's Beckham's Miami team. You know, it could
now
be.
Now Loic is involved.
Yeah, it could be any one of several contenders there.
Looking to the weekend in the Premier League, obviously the Manc Derby stands out.
Right.
I haven't seen the bookies odds, but City had to be a big favorite in that, you think, right?
Big favorites? I don't know. You think?
I think so.
I don't know big favorites.
Well,
I think they'd be...
big favorites. Favorites, sorry.
It's at Old Trafford, is it not?
You know what? That's a good question.
I think it is.
Let me find out here.
I wouldn't think that they would be big favorites. I think United have come along in recent weeks and I think close the gap with their City rivals a bit.
United just don't impress me at all right now, whereas City are impressing me, even with the injuries.
Right.
Where are we here? Leagues. Premier League.
I'm pretty sure they're at.
Fixtures. It's Sunday, right?
Yes.
Sunday. It is at Old Trafford, yes.
There you go.
All right, so they probably won't be big favorites. You're right. Just, I think, City have really, I think there's a gap between these two and daylight.
Oh, no question. Yeah, no question. I just wouldn't agree that they're big favorites on Sunday. I think they're probably favorites, just not massive favorites.
Seeing Villa against Swansea, Gary Monk and Tim Sherwood. Can't believe Gary Monk's under pressure right now. I think it's totally unfair.
Yeah,
it's been an awful month. I understand that. But come on. What do you want? I mean, if the speculation is true and he's in the hot seat, I think that's, you can't let this guy go.
Speaking of Swansea, it's an interesting story that I read in the Spanish press. Apparently, Michu, remember him?
Yeah, I do.
Still
absolutely.
On the books at Swansea.
Is he really?
But he's going to sign with some like fourth tier team in Spain.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he'd be sure going to Turkey.
Yeah.
Like everyone else.
But, I mean, you know, you would think, you know, I know it's not that great season that it had a few years ago, but you wonder why he's, what happened to him?
He jumped off a cliff, it seemed like.
Yeah. And why is he, I mean, is he that much out of favor with Gary Monk?
He was never the most, how do I put this? He was never the most slight of figures.
No.
Right?
Absolutely not.
Right? He was packing a few pounds that perhaps other players weren't.
He scored, though.
He was amazing. I loved him. But you wonder, you know, later in his career, if he's let himself go, if he's not prepared to train as hard, and that's why.
Maybe.
You know?
It's a good point.
We'll see. But yeah, he was fun to watch. But yeah, Monk and Sherwood, if Villa loses, I think Sherwood's
probably gone. You think he's gone?
Yeah. And I don't know what you want him to do with that squad, to be honest with you.
But then who do you replace him
with? Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? Some unknown European guy who's got a cool name, probably. Yeah, I know. There's
well, Big Sam got a job, so yeah. He's out.
Yeah,
he's out.
Yeah.
Who else is? I'm trying to think of the normal.
Well, who's
Redknapp?
Sam Dyche, maybe Sean Dyche, maybe did a good job last year.
Right,
right. The lower divisions.
Redknapp is still at QPR, right?
Don't say it. He's not going to Villa.
Oh, right.
He's not going to Villa. He's doing Sky TV now, I think.
Right,
right. Yeah. Good question. What can they afford? I mean,
yeah.
They're trying to sell the club, right? So they can't afford to be dragged into a relegation scrap, but I don't think they've got much choice at this point. Leicester Palace, that's a good game.
That'll be a good one.
Yeah, really good game. West Ham Chelsea, interesting.
That'll be a good one.
Chelsea are on the up, we think, and West Ham have been brilliant, but they're at home, so it's not quite the same. Mm. We've got Sunderland Newcastle and the big derby there, and Liverpool against Southampton. Klopp has been ripping the FA this week for the treatment of Rossiter. Their young 19-year-old. Mm. He played 3 games in 5 days. So he's getting the gist of things in the Premier League. You rip the FA when you can. They tied, by the way, Rubin Kazan 1-1
in
Europa League today. Watched a bit of that game and actually looked okay. Didn't have the ruthless touch, but then it was Origi up front. Benteke came on late and he hit the post.
Mm.
But they had the real pace to them. They're moving the ball quickly, which I haven't seen for a long time. So that's
encouraging.
It bodes well, just a week into his tenure. But right. I think it's also a reality check. Don't expect miracles because you're tying Ruben Kazan at Anfield.
There's yeah. No, of course.
With this team. As far as what we're doing on the network this weekend, on Friday, we've got some German for you. We've got some Hoffenheim against Hamburg.
Yep.
Saturday, we got Villa-Swansea. We got Arsenal-Everton. We got Bayern Munich against Cologne.
There's another EPL game, too.
Let me just scan down here. There must be, right?
Yeah. Because it's three on...
Yeah, well, this... Supposed to be, but it's not on the, for some reason, not on the list here.
Not on the list, yeah. There's another game, but I can't remember. Yeah. And then Sunday, it's Liverpool-Southampton, which should be
and Bournemouth against Spurs, and Borussia Mönchengladbach, Schalke. That's a good one.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
Germany, yeah. So a lot of football coming up. We should mention before we leave, Craig Forrest, our good friend.
Yes.
Craig Forrest, inducted into the Canadian Sports Hall of Fame this week. Fantastic, fully deserved. And I don't know, the intro, Tim, was that Canada's greatest goalkeeper. Boom. No debate.
No. I mean, I think you could even make an argument Canada's greatest footballer.
Soccer player. You know what? I've had that discussion before, maybe with you, maybe on this podcast, but I agree with you. I mean, who else do you have, really?
Certainly, Di Rosario is probably up there.
But he didn't make the leap to Europe.
Right.
And that was huge.
Yeah. I mean, think about this, too. I mean, Craig, and I wrote a sort of story about this earlier for Sportsnet.ca this week, only started playing soccer at the age of 12. And then 4 years later, as a 16-year-old, that's when he went to England, on a trial and, you know, ended up going to Ipswich Town. And another thing that I think is just incredible is that, you know, in the first season of the Premier League, you know, when it switched over from the first division to the Premier League, which was, what, 92, 93? Mm-hmm. There was only 11 non-British, there was only 11 foreign-based players in the starting lineups on the opening day. Craig Forrest was one of them.
It's amazing.
Now, you think about how many foreigners are in the league now and how much they dominate. I mean, I don't know for a fact, but I would think that foreign players would be the slight majority in the league. I don't know.
Yeah, they are. Okay. Oh, yeah. There's no doubt.
Is there? Okay.
Absolutely.
So to go from...
There's a reason for that.
And so think about that. There only being 11 on that first day. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's incredible. And he was one of them.
And bear in mind...
Peter Schmeichel was one of them. Like, he was in pretty good company.
Back in that era, too, I mean, there were some very good English goalkeepers available.
Absolutely.
Right? And you had the... Sure, you had the Schmeichels, who obviously an absolute legend. I think Bruce Grobbelaar was still playing at that point.
Probably was, yeah.
Right? Who Craig looked up to.
Yeah.
As did I. But, and it's funny, when I met Craig for the first time, you know, you saw him play, and he played with some emotion.
He did.
And it was intense. And then you meet Craig, and you couldn't find a more opposite character.
Yes, I know.
Laid-back, chilled.
Very easygoing. Yeah.
Right? So easygoing. And then you see him play. It's like, that can't be the same guy.
Yeah.
But I still remember... Gold Cup 2000.
Fantastic.
You know, it stands out, as does every Canadian fan, but for me, he was the best player in the field most games.
Well, and it's funny about the Gold Cup, because I've asked so many of his former teammates about this, including, Jason DeVos, who scored the winning goal. And he's like, you know, I've never seen a goalkeeper. He says, in terms of goalkeepers I've played with, I've never seen a goalkeeper stand on his head more or, you know, bail a team out more than Craig Forrest did. He just said he was a wall. I mean, he was just absolutely... He was the difference between Canada winning the tournament that year. The other thing, too, is it's funny. I remember speaking to Craig about this last year, about this for another story I did. And he was like, because he was at West Ham at the time. And I think the tournament was in January or February, I want to think. I want to say it wasn't in the summer like it is now, the Gold Cup. And so he was, you know, away with Canada in Los Angeles or wherever it was. And he was getting regular phone calls from Harry Redknapp saying, you know, is this thing done yet? When are you coming back? So it was like after the group stage, like, no, we've got another game. We're through. And he, like, every step of the way, he was getting hounded. And I think it's a pretty common theme back then in terms of a lot of guys played for Canada very much to the detriment of their professional careers.
Absolutely.
Not just
intense pressure not to play for Canada.
Absolutely. And I mean, I know I've had discussion with Jason DeVos, and he felt the same pressure and Forrest, obviously. But the fact that his manager, like, was calling and saying, look, you know, this is some rinky-dink CONCACAF tournament. We need you in the for the club. I think that says a lot about, you know, players being committed to playing for Canada when it didn't always suit their professional interests at the time. So well done to him.
Yeah, 100%. Well said. I've always had such respect for the Forrests, the DeVosses, the Guzmans, guys that always showed up for their country.
Yeah.
No matter where their career was at. It'd be very easy for a club to cut loose a Canadian player.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and they knew that. You know, that was the risk they took.
Yeah.
And, hey, maybe they turned down, they said goodbye to some money.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Their careers would have been, their professional careers, and it would have been a lot smoother had they decided not to play for Canada, or as much for Canada as they did, right? Because this isn't like, okay, well, if you're Belgian, yeah, okay, we can go to Belgium for a weekend or whatever, and you're back pretty easily. When you're for a CONCACAF nation and you're playing professionally in Europe, you're talking about, you know, a cross-Atlantic flight, you're talking about...
And often the CSA,
yeah,
God love them, wouldn't be playing first class.
Right. So, so it's one thing for like a club, you know, releasing a player to play in the European qualifiers. Another thing entirely for the to release them to play for, you know, in a CONCACAF tournament or qualifiers. They're, you know, they're a lot less, not that they're happy to do either one, but they're a lot less happy about, they're far more unhappy about releasing them for a CONCACAF tournament. So
when you're like Forrest or DeVos and you're freakishly tall.
Oh my God.
You're like a fold up like a deck chair.
Yeah.
In the plane. It's not good for on backs.
No, not
and
at
hamstrings
all.
At all.
No, not at all.
So they made that sacrifice, but yeah.
But well done to Craig. It really is well deserved. And, you know, a great colleague, but a great friend, I would say.
He has some great, great Harry Redknapp stories.
He does.
And just from inside that West Ham room, there were some characters. My God.
Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant stories, which he will never, ever regale on air because he just can't. All right, JMO, we're out of time. Hope you enjoyed that. Our thanks to Olivier Tremblay of MLSsoccer.com. Check out sportsnet.ca for a wealth of content, including those great stories on Craig Forrest. JMO, great job on the one regarding his rise to superstardom in the English Premier League. It's a great read, so check that out. And check out Sportsnet this weekend for both the English Premier League and Die Bundesliga. For John Molinaro, I'm James Sharman. Cheers for listening.